Welcome to CougarCast with Keith Schertz and Tosh McIntosh. CougarCast, covering BYU football and basketball. Email the show, cougarcast@gmail.com, and follow on Twitter at CougarCast.
Greetings, my name is Keith Schertz, and I'm here with the 2002 Daily Herald Utah County Name of the Year. Tosh McIntosh, a man that rides next to BYU royalty on the airplane. Tosh, you got a chance to go to the University of Arizona game at the University of Phoenix Stadium. Anyway, it's a big stadium for a school without a team.
Yeah, for a college that doesn't have sports, they sure do have a nice stadium.
They've got a big stadium there. Yeah, so how was it? How was the stadium? Did they have any cool food? Tell me about it.
It's funny you ask that, but yes. Let's start. Well, I can't go food first, but I did love the food. But the atmosphere was awesome. The BYU fans, I always make bets, and I'm not a gambling man, but if I had to make a bet, I would say that 68% of the fans were BYU fans.
Yeah.
It was just a fun atmosphere. Food. I'm walking in. My friends talk me into going an hour early, and that's not me. Like, I get super nervous right before the game. I don't want to be there early. Looking at that countdown clock just feels like it's taken all day. But I also am very much a nervous eater. So I'm walking in. I see they are selling something called pizza box nachos.
Pizza box nachos.
And that is what it
Take
sounds
my money.
Like. It's a pizza box that the entire box is filled with nacho supreme. I mean, of course, chips and cheese, but then you got pork, you got olives, you've got jalapenos. It's just this pile, a full piece. My guess is 4,000 to 5,000 calories. I'm so nervous. I'm pounding these things before the game. They were all gone by the start of the game. Like, so when you bring up food, yes, I ate my weight in nachos, and it somehow worked. So now I got to keep this nacho thing going every single game.
All right, the nacho tradition. That's good. But no pizza. There wasn't any, like, pizza. It was just the box itself.
Yeah, it was just...
There weren't, like, pepperonis or something.
No, it was just... That was the carton to just put a massive amount of nachos in.
Okay. Well, congratulations on your pizza box nachos. And that you got to go and watch... Yet another thrilling season-opening game.
One heck of a game.
And first impressions. We've seen a Ty Detmer offense now. What do you think?
I love his use of formations, his use of personnel. That we were all talking about the tight end and worried we were weak at that position. But he got great use out of every position on the field, including the tight end. That would be my first thoughts on Ty Detmer's offense, is he's really using the tools that he has at hand.
And your thoughts on Taysom?
I think Taysom looked more accurate than I ever remember him. I think he was playing a little bit cautious out there, surprisingly running the ball. He wasn't as quick to look to run, and he seemed like he was very much run out of bounds more than I've ever seen him before.
Tosh, at some point injuries aggregate.
Yeah.
And hurt people's health long term.
I
think he might be a little too slow now. Like, I mean, he's still, you know, but he's faster than I've ever run. But, like, he's not as fast as he was.
You're not the only guy that's saying that. I'm not there at all. Like, I think what's happened, a lot of fans are saying that. But we, as Taysom fans or BYU fans, we remember the insane runs that he had. But he's had lots of games where he didn't break any big runs. He's had lots of games where the defensive backs were running him out of bounds. I think Taysom is still Taysom. I think his cape will come off, and he will have many big-time runs where we will laugh at. We thought maybe he was a little slower.
He's making a tentative return. You mean that he was a little... He was tentative Taysom in game one.
You like that use of double T's there?
I love alliteration.
Yeah, he was very accurate and aggressive with I think, the short routes especially. He threw some NFL-level slant routes. But he was surprisingly not as prone to run as he has been in past years.
Okay. And we've seen an Elisa Tuiaki defense.
Freaking loved it.
Yeah.
Our defense looked just like they were balling. They looked amazing. If you think about it, they're potent receivers. That was their strong position group. They didn't have their receivers didn't have a single big play. Like, they had a few short yardage things. Our guys defended them well. Our ends. You know, Lange, and then the surprise of the game defensively.
We there's saw a lot many of Corbin. Options,
but Corbin Kaufusi has got to win. I mean, he looks like a legit college D-end out there making plays.
Turns out a sport where he doesn't necessarily have to catch anything might be a little bit better for old Corbin.
He has to catch the quarterback, and he did a good job of that.
Well, it's a lot bigger target.
That is. But I say he was a defensive MVP or defensive surprise, but other names were that – In reality, I think I give the MVP actually between good old Francis Bernard.
Yeah, he played well.
Or Butch.
Pau.
Like, those guys are ballers. And who would have guessed you can just switch from running back to outside linebacker and be making plays all over the field? The defense, as you can even tell, I got a lot more excited about our defense that game than I did our offense even.
Well, the scheme's exciting. I mean, there was a lot of pressure, it seemed like, and it's you know, everyone was worried, do we have corners that can step up and do that? But the Cougar Cash, we weren't.
No.
We weren't worried about it.
We were worried about was our kicker. And were we right there or were we right there that we had some worries to worry about with the kicking game?
Oh, and we did have worries, and we should have worries.
Yep.
Listen, a couple special teams observations. That's what the folks come here for. They come for the special teams observations. But a couple things. Linehan has got another year kicking a football under his boot, and he is he's doing really well with that. I mean, every single time they had a chance to do it. And fastest guy on the team, Mike Davis.
Yeah.
Almost had a chance to pin. I mean, we had a legitimate chance to catch that football.
Four times.
Four out of the five punts.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one time it was just a distance punt, right?
But even with him pinning, with four of his punts landing inside the 10, some of which went into the end zone, he still punted for like a 46-yard average on the game. Like, Linehan was lights. We had some bright spots. He was for sure one of them.
So, that's a weapon. Right? That's a huge weapon, and we can talk about that when we remember, you know, Tom Hackett for the Utes last year. He made life difficult in that Las Vegas Bowl. You know, one of the reasons we didn't have enough time to make the full comeback, I really believe this, is because of his punting. One of the things that, another special teams observation, I actually thought that the punt receiving by Garrett Juergens was good. He didn't let it bounce, Tosh. He would run up in there and he'd catch the ball. Now, it was usually a fair catch, but that is a nice change of pace as far as I can tell from the last 2-3 years where there's been a lot of like, well, if you're unsure if you can get there, then just let it bounce. It's like, No, go in there and catch that ball.
No, I agree. Special teams looked great. We won the game on a special teams play, as everyone listening
okay,
knows.
Hang on. Special teams look great?
Okay.
The first field goal was luckiest thing on earth. We missed a PAT.
So kick return looked great. I think kick return helped us win the game on that last drive. He had like a 30-yard return.
Yeah, it's decent. Yep.
Mr. Hadley. And then stay out of Vegas, Hadley. And then we had
don't let girls hold signs and spell out your name for you. You know how I'll spell it for you. M-A-T-T.
The punting game was great. The kicking game, the extra points field goal place kicking game was shaky, but we don't need to talk about that. Everyone knows it seems like for at least today we found our guy. Guy went in there and drilled the winner. Fun ending to that game.
So Jake Oldroyd is the new king of campus.
Yep, the new Jimmer.
For the week. He's having a fun week, I'm sure. I was amazed. You know, we talked about the offense. First of all, I love the huddling up.
Yeah.
I hate to sound like an old man here, but I like it that the game goes by faster, Tosh. I know.
I don't care about that.
Maybe I'm crazy.
I like that the players like huddling.
I like that it goes by a little quicker. The other bit is that I really liked, you know, the idea that everyone is kind of on the same page no matter what. There isn't, you know, like, well, did we point at the right pitcher of the four pitchers on this sign? That whole thing is gone. And then the other thing that I really obviously liked is Jamal.
Oh, yeah.
Jamal, everybody.
He was running like a man possessed. Like, he was just, and his vision. He was seeing the field, juking. He was, I mean, I don't know how, he looked like a legit NFL talent running back.
Yeah. Right there. Nowadays, everybody want to talk. They got something to say.
Keep going.
When I was chewing it live, my brain went, but they forgot about Jam. They forgot about Jamal. Here's the deal, man. Jamal is legitimately one of the best running backs ever play at BYU. Yes. And we had just forgotten. Just in general, fans have forgotten what it's like to see a guy like that on the field and have one of the three or four or five best running backs to ever be, you know, on campus. He's going to be the career rushing leader, and he's outstanding. And he got robbed, man.
Oh yeah,
he people have over 200 stop yards. Holding.
Yeah,
stop holding.
Pushing the back like an illegal motion. There was some just terrible stuff there.
So yeah, I mean, we gotta give a little shout out to the welcome back Jamal. More important return, at least through game one, than Taysom Hill.
Correct.
Tosh, I have an important question for you.
I'm listening.
Is Utah in BYU's head?
Oh yeah, there. I think that's been the biggest difference in this sad losing streak that we're in, is that mentally we have just been little weaklings out there, and Utah comes in mentally where they need to be.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of reasons why maybe we could guess why it's been bad for the last 5 years, but new regime makes me feel a lot better.
Yes.
We still had the old coaching staff here. I'd be more scared about this game, and I'm already pretty scared. we've lost 5 in a row to the Utes, okay? And you know what's crazy is we always, you and I always shake our heads. I think every BYU fan, it's just like, how are they so fortunate? Like, all the time. It seems like if there's a replay review, you know, the official
every
review in the booth,
goes
they
off
get
their
it.
Way.
Every bounce.
Every goes their way. Even if it's off our guy's shoulder pad for a pick, or if our quarterback's fumbling the first snap of the game.
Or a punt goes short and it's going to fall down in the midst of players and it's hit us first and they're going to recover it. Like, they recover every fumble that gets loose. They get every break, it seems. And you know, and so this is what how they've won game. I mean, gosh, they went 1 for 20 in the 2013 game, Tosh. Utah went 1 for 19 on third down and won.
Insane.
They won that game. Let that one sink in. We had a kickoff return in that game by Adam Hine that got called back on a holding call that wasn't really a holding call, but Utah got it. You know, I mean, Utah always seems to get the breaks, and the thing is. Is how much of that has to do with some of the yips that's going on?
I think a lot of it. I really think a lot of it. And you brought up Jamal being the difference maker. I think mentally that guy, at least he always comes ready to play. And what a lot of fans don't realize, it seems like he's been here forever, and he has, but for different reasons, he never gets the ball against Utah. That he's missed some games. He got a concussion in the one game.
Yeah.
He's only had 20 carries against Utah in his entire career.
Wow.
And he's going to get that many this game. And so I think Jamal and his attitude he brings to the team is one of the reasons we can come into this game in a lot better mental place.
Can I tell you one of my favorite things about the Jamal Williams experience?
Yes.
His mother on Twitter, of course, very active.
Yep.
And actively refers to her son as Jay Swag Daddy.
That is awesome. She seems awesome on Twitter. At the games, she always finds her way to be on the screen up dancing, wearing, she's got like a Jamal's mom jersey.
Yeah, but some people have called you T-Mac in your life. Your mother ever call you T-Mac?
Even in the 90s and early 2000s, I mean, T-Mac Daddy was a name that was thrown out embarrassingly enough. But I have never heard that name come from my mom's lips.
Was that your AOL screen name?
Okay, T-Mac Daddy? Now we're going personal here. But if everyone remembers what their first email was that they came up with as a teenager, there's some funny ones.
Yes, sir.
Mine, tmacdaddy@hotmail.com. There was no numbers, no anything. Like, I was the first one that got tmacdaddy@hotmail.com. Don't send your emails there, because on my mission, it went too long without using that email, and Hotmail stole that great name from me.
Oh.
But yeah, so I self-promoted myself through email as the T-Mac Daddy.
So that would be funny. Anyway, if your mother would do like, you she know, yeah, go do your thing, T-Mac Daddy. Like, it's awesome.
But Jamal's it's mom like, refers to him
she calls him Jay Swag Daddy, and it's hilarious. All right. Let's just say that, bear in mind that all these breaks seem to go Utah's way.
Okay.
Again, it comes down to the parts of the games that you just don't think about. It's things like it's field position, it's ball security, okay? And it's special teams. It's big returns on punts. It's pinning the other team deep. It's all of those things. And Utah has successfully dominated BYU in all three of those categories. And even in the games that we've won, we've kind of been at odds with
the ones that we win, but that's
and,
yeah.
But usually field position is at odds, and we have problems with those things. Tosh, in the 5-game losing streak, Utah has turned over the ball 5 times. BYU is only forced to turn over a game. BYU has turned over the ball 19 times. That means that Utah is a plus 14 in turnover margin. Okay, but more importantly, how devastating are those turnovers, right? 5 of those turnovers represent defensive touchdowns for the Utes, okay?
So they've got as many defensive touchdowns as we've got total turnovers.
Correct.
Jeesh.
Okay? They have, in their 19 forced turnovers, they've then turned them around into 89 points, okay? Over the last 5 games, Utah has scored 150 points, meaning that 59.3% of all the points that the Utes have scored, of all of them that they have scored, it has come on a points off a turnover, okay? BYU has scored 7 points off turnover, and that only adds up to 7.9% of their total of 88 points. So again, BYU over the last 5 games has scored 88 points. How many has Utah scored off turnovers? 89. So they've scored more points on points off turnovers than we've just scored, period.
Because it's short fields, it's momentum, it's all sorts of crazy stuff.
It's Jake Heaps trying to make a play. There's all sorts of stuff happening, okay? Now, here's the last little bit that I'll go over, okay? The length of scoring drives, meaning how long did the teams have to travel in order to score. Okay, BYU has had 16 scoring drives over the last 5 games against the University of Utah. They have had to go, on average, 52.1 yards to score. Okay, that's to break it down by how they scored, 54.5 yards per touchdown drive. In their 10 touchdown drives, they've had to average 54.5 yards, so more than half the length of the field, and 48 yards for a field goal. Okay, so but 52.1 yards on average to score for the Cougars. Utah, 33.4 yards per scoring drive. 33.4 yards per scoring drive, okay? And they've scored 25 times. Now here's the one that'll kill you. 32.3 yards per touchdown drive. In their 19 touchdowns, the average length of their touchdown drive has been 32.3 yards. That means they're starting with the ball on the Cougars 32 on average when they score. Crazy. On average!
Yeah, that is wild.
How can you play winning football like that? You can't.
Yeah.
It's an impossibility to do that.
There's really, like, if, from even before I've heard all these stats, the key, number one key to the game in beating the Utes is you cannot turn the ball over.
Can't do it.
And we do game after game after game. That needs to change this game.
And big special team play is the other thing. They can be as bad as a turnover if you're not careful. So, but just to measure it one more time, okay? BYU to score a touchdown on average has had to go 22.2 yards further than Utah.
Yeah.
So that's a false start and a face mask and then some. Okay. So that's amazing. Okay. That is an amazing thing that BYU has not really forced Utah to work for it in the last 5 years. It just hasn't happened. BYU has not been on the positive side on the turnover margin. Okay. That hasn't happened. So
I mean, for heaven's sakes, they've scored 5 defensive touchdowns. Like, we're spotting them a TD every game with offensive mistakes.
Yeah.
Like,
here, do you want to know why I think that is? Because I really think that our old regime coaching staff, offensively, was so sold on we didn't need to change our scheme for Utah, that we needed to out-execute. Their coaching staff took this game crazy serious and still do. And they just out-coached it. They knew where our players were going to be. Like, the bounces did go unlucky, but Utah players were consistently right where they needed to be. And this is going all the way back to the Max Hall days. Like, that is one thing that I love about what I'm hearing and seeing so far about the new staff. I think we will come into this game much more prepared, be able to exploit Utah's weaknesses, play, make in-game adjustments. Here's what I love. Coach Lamb on Monday said that last week, the week that we played and beat Arizona, that he watched game film on Utah every single day.
Wow. Oh, he wasn't focused, Tosh.
So,
isn't that this is the worst word to be in football, though, by the way. Distraction.
Yeah, no, I that loved...
Word, oh, distraction.
I loved his comment. He addressed that head on.
It wasn't a distraction, Tosh?
He's like, I've never felt like it gets me distracted to look at different teams' plays in the same week. He's like, people in life have all sorts of different distractions. Me watching the game, the team we're playing next, doesn't distract me.
Beyond that, if you can have your assistant head coach doing that and let Kalani
totally.
Do and his thing.
Yeah.
And that's the bit, is I love the way that Kalani Sitake is trusting his coaching staff. I think that the things that he's doing and the fact that he turned over the reins, he's not calling the defensive plays, he wasn't involved in that, he was reiterated again, like Elisa Tuiaki is running the defense.
Yeah.
Ty Detmer runs the offense, and Kalani's the head coach. And it's like, it's great. It's great. So that means we have the equal number of responsible coaching staff members as the University of Utah. And that hasn't been the case.
Totally.
Almost always. But we've played them over the last 11 years. So I think that it'll be fascinating to see how it goes and just not shooting yourselves in the foot. So we know Jamal doesn't really fumble. He's never lost a fumble in his career so far. I thought that the way that they played against Arizona indicated less, like they were less likely to turn over the football.
Yeah.
Okay.
And we had 0 turnovers. It was awesome.
Yeah. Will they turn over the football against the University of Utah?
I think yes. I mean, you don't go multiple games in a row to start your season with no turnovers. I don't think it's going to get out of hand. But I think, yeah, we're not going to have another 0 turnover game. I just don't see that happening.
Yeah, and I think it's going to be really, you know, fascinating. But that to me, it's this game is about BYU's offense versus Utah's defense. Because I have faith that the defense can manage and slow down the Utes.
Okay? Totally, I agree.
But our offense against that Utah defense is a problem. So Tosh, okay, go ahead. Yeah,
I was going to say specifically on their D-line and their DBs. That's always the strength of a Kyle Whittingham defense, and this year's team is no different.
And always really tough linebackers too. But Tosh, how do you beat Taysom Hill? We've watched a lot of teams do it.
Stack the box. Mm-hmm. You put 8 guys in the box. You bring safeties up. And you just shut. You sell out to shut down the short stuff and the run. And you challenge Taysom to throw and beat you over the top.
Okay.
I mean, that's what Utah did when they beat Taysom before. That's what, you know, Wisconsin, Notre Dame.
Washington in the bowl game.
Yeah, that's what teams do. That's what Utah will for sure do. And they have the hosses to feel comfortable doing it.
Is there, I mean, there's no chance that they're going to let Jamal run all over them, are they? Is there?
Well,
like, can Jamal go out and bust 50-yard runs?
If you would have asked me a week ago, I would have said no way. Jamal was running like such a madman that he may be able to break a big one. But it's going to be – Utah's defense is at a whole different level than Arizona's. And they will – we will not – it's going to be a different game running the ball than against Arizona, for sure.
Okay, and then the last bit on this, just as a theoretical, but we pound it all the time, okay? four trips to the red zone, two field goals, two touchdowns. 50% of the time, Taysom Hill scores touchdowns when he goes in the red zone. That's the truth. That's been what has been the case about him over his whole career. Half the trips that he makes are touchdowns, and the other half are going to be some compromise of field goals or a turnover or something. By the way, he almost threw an interception in the end zone. But they have to – I mean, 18 points I feel like may not cut it. When they get opportunities in the red zone, they have to do it. Tosh, let's bring up 2013 one more time.
Okay.
In that game, BYU made six trips to the red zone. They ended up scoring 13 points.
The reason why 2013 matters.
That's Taysom
was the starter. That was a Taysom Hill-led offense.
Six trips to the red zone, okay? They got two field goals and a touchdown.
Yeah, I mean, you brought up the Utah only went one for whatever, like insane on thirds. We out yarded them like crazy. That was when we really said we killed them between the 20s, but we couldn't score. Can't happen this week.
In the biggest moment,
we have to score with our opportunities.
And in the biggest moment of that game, we went two times.
Some walk on that never played like again.
Eric Thornton. We went to Eric Thornton twice. He caught one catch in his career and quit football after that year. So I'm glad that Robert and I decided that was the guy that we were going to put the rivalry game into the hands of. So I think that they have to score touchdowns. And they almost got bitten for their inability to just put it in the end zone against Arizona.
Yeah.
I mean, that was the whole reason Arizona was able to make a run late in that game, was just because we weren't putting it in the end zone. Had we just put it in every time, you know, we would have been in business and the fourth quarter wouldn't be as interesting and Jake Olroyd wouldn't have dates lined up like crazy. But that's the deal. But you're getting ready to tell us a little bit about some of those names on that Utah defense. Who's going to make life tough?
The biggest one is Lotulelei, their right defensive tackle. That name sounds familiar, and it should, because his brother is Star Lotulelei, sure, that was a freaking beast in college and is now really making his mark in the NFL. So his brother, who is debatably just as good.
Lowell.
Yep. Lowell Lotulelei. He plays right defensive tackle, so he's going to have a matchup with the SUU transfer, Kian Norman, who I think played great at left guard. But it's welcome to the big times, Kian. We really need a great game out of our left side. And the center is going to have to help him. I mean, Lowell's a guy that no one is just single blocking all game and dominating.
The problem with that is if you double team Lowell Lotulelei, right, Moko Fisi
is great.
Yeah.
Moko Fisi on the left defensive tackle, that guy's a beast. And then Hunter Dimmick, the left talent.
He's busy, man. That guy's just up to stuff.
On their forefront, that I think, I'm not trying to get anybody like lockerboard material, but their right defensive end, Pita, who actually...
If you're curious, it's Talmo
Pita. I'm not even going to go with his last name.
So yeah, Pita.
He's really a pass rusher, third down situation. They got, you know, Fitz is, plays a lot. D-line is dang good.
I'm so upset. My silly computer, whatever happened, it started recording it kind of funny where it was skipping seconds. So I apologize. Second half of this podcast, it's bad. You know, it's bad batch. So I'm going to throw it away. But I'll just cover quickly on my own. Unfortunately, I don't have Tosh here. But on my own, we talked about the way to beat Utah's defense. Okay, beating Utah's defense is to throw downfield. When they made their run against Utah last year in the Las Vegas Bowl, those 28 unanswered points were accompanied by a ton of downfield passes. Tanner Mangum completed 8 20-yard passes in the 28-point comeback. Okay, he had 3 or 4 that went for over 35 yards. So throwing downfield is the way to combat that Utah defense. Whenever we've been successful against Utah's defense, it hasn't been by running. It hasn't been by throwing short. It's by going downfield. And this is why you should be worried about that fact. I kept a passing chart during the Arizona game. Taysom Hill, threw five passes downfield during the game. Five passes where he threw it more than 10 yards down the field. From the 10 to 19 yard range, he threw two, and then he threw three passes past 20 yards. All told, he went 1 for 5 for 17 yards. So he had this wonderful pass completion percentage, and a lot of people are really enthusiastic about how much work he got done by passing the football. And it was good. He was accurate, and he was finding receivers on short routes. He was outstanding on short routes, but he only completed 20% of his passes downfield. When he threw really downfield, deep, when he went 20 yards or further, he didn't complete a single one of them. So that's going to have to improve. He underthrew Kurtz on a deep throw to the left. He went deep to the left each of the three times that he threw deep. He never threw right and went deep or to the middle of the field. He never throws to the middle of the field deep. Just over his career, as I've tracked it, this is just, he doesn't look to the middle of the field when he's looking really deep. But he missed Colby Pearson. He had a chance to maybe get it. It was out of bounds. It was close, but that wasn't made. And then it was underthrow to Kurtz and a little bit of an underthrow. It was underthrown to Jonah Trinneman. But that's the way to beat Utah. And I think that Utah has the personnel and stuff to really frustrate BYU's offense if they're unable to attack downfield. And there's reason to be skeptical about our ability to attack downfield with number 7 under center. Tosh and I don't really fear the Utah offense. They have a few talented players. Running back for them, Joe Williams last year, he was able to be successful when they had short fields in that first quarter of death. But really the guy that we're scared of, that we really think can really hurt BYU if they're not careful, is Troy McCormick. They've got to limit Troy McCormick, the running back. He was hurt last year. He's back. He averaged in 2014 when he got to run, he averaged 5.9 yards a carry. Troy McCormick is someone to watch out for. We also talked a little bit about Troy Williams. He's the JUCO transfer. He's the new quarterback for Utah. We're unsure that he has the ability to beat the Cougars' defense. He didn't show a whole lot against SUU. He completed just over 50% of his passes, and he didn't really show a whole lot of quarterbacking skills when it comes to looking off defenders and making all the throws. So he's not really somebody to worry greatly about. Tim Patrick is his favorite target, and he's a very good player. But we actually went over and talked about an email that we got from one of our listeners, Clark, our man Clark from Brentwood, California. People versus O.J. Simpson was a fantastic show. So anyway, he had a question. He asked us that the only two touchdowns Arizona scored were on long runs that were BYU missed assignments at the line of scrimmage. How does this performance by the defense change your expectations for the season? And what do you think, can BYU hold Utah to 20 points or fewer? So we both think that BYU's defense can hold Utah to 20 points or fewer. Utah only scored 24 against SUU. One of the things that may worry you about that is that Southern Utah game, Utah may have been holding their pens close to their chest like they're Aaron Burr, and they were busy, you know, disguising and trying to hide their playbook so that it made it more difficult for BYU. But from watching a little bit of that game, it did not seem like that was just what was going on. Like the Utah offense could just do whatever they want. They went at will, and they decided to really go so basic that they couldn't do anything against Southern Utah. I actually think that while it was pretty vanilla and wasn't that exotic, their offense, they provided kind of what they can do, I feel. You know, I'd be surprised if they came out there and they looked totally different. They looked like they were competent and they could do things, but they did not look like a dominant offense against Southern Utah, and it did not appear that way because they were just, you know, trying to disguise what they're going to do against BYU, you know? And so I think the reason that I was so skeptical about the BYU defense before the game against Arizona is because I think there's good reason to be skeptical of basically any defense against Arizona and Rich Rod. Especially Kalani Sitake had struggled in the past. And so now that we've seen it, obviously, Francis Bernard and Butch Pau, they did their job. They basically kept it together as much as they could throughout the game. Part of the game plan for the team was for the offense to have long drives and keep the ball out of the hands of Arizona, which is very smart. The two big runs that Clark referenced, they occurred by missed assignments. And some of that was due to the linebackers not making the right read or making the right play. So, listen, the defense was great. There's a lot of opportunities for that defense to really be special. And obviously the secondary, to me, you know, Troy Warner, he looked every bit the highly touted recruit. He looked very comfortable out there. Mike Davis, Kai Nakua, and Hanneman, that group, they make it so that passing on BYU can be difficult. And I think that the defense has really been bolstered by that coverage. And so I think that they've done a great job with that. To tell you about our predictions, if you're curious, Tosh selected the Utes. He took them 24-21. They're in his head. He was just trying to reverse jinx it. He's picked BYU on this podcast every time against Utah, and he just couldn't do it again. He wanted to try the reverse jinx, so he went with them. It broke his heart. He didn't want to do it. It was an emotional moment, but he ended up having to do it. So my pick for this game, you know, the BYU-Utah game's incredible. It's such a great spectacle. You can remember each one with just a few words. The 2015, the Bully War. In 13, Darren Lucy. BYU scores 13 points on 6 red zone trips. And for me, Eric Thornton going to Eric Thornton twice. 2012, a blocked field goal. Utah fans rush, doinked a field goal. 2011, Heaps fumble, 54-10. 2010, blocked last-second field goal, Utah wins. 2009, Andrew George is running. 2008, 6 Max Hall turnovers. 2007, 4th-and-18, magic happens. 2006, answered prayer. 2005, Utes pull it out in overtime. 2004, Utes go undefeated. And 2003, 3-0. So on and so on. It goes on, right? It has, you know, Lavelle's last miracle and everything else, right? Luke Staley darting up the sideline. The point is this is an amazing game. And I think we're going to remember 2016 as Kalani's revenge. I think that the Cougars at some point will stop shooting themselves in the foot. They're going to make Utah earn it. I think that Linehan has the ability to make Utah have long offensive drives. I don't believe that their offense is capable of making the long offensive drives. I think if we can get a game manager of Taysom, and don't fool yourself, Taysom Hill against the University of Arizona was a game manager, okay? He was out there being Peyton Manning during his last season with the Broncos. Okay, that's what he was doing. He's just a game manager, and it was enough to win. He made the right reads. He was accurate on short throws, and he didn't turn the football over. He extended drives on third down. He was successful, and he put the Cougars in a position to win the game, and Jake Oldroyd made the kick. Taysom Hill was not the game breaker. He was the game manager. And I think that if you can get Taysom Hill to once again be a game manager, I think what's going to happen is that we're not going to turn over the football. We're going to hold on to the football. Jamal doesn't fumble. All of these things mean that there's not going to be any turnovers for the Cougars, that we're going to put some clock into the bank. When we have the football, we're going to get a few first downs. We're going to be able to punt and pin them deep. And when we get in the end zone, even though I really question our ability to, you know, be successful in the red zone, Taysom was able to get in the red zone a bunch of times. I think what's going to happen is we're going to get there four times this game. I think we're going to get in the end zone twice. I think we're going to kick a field goal and make it, and then kick a field goal and miss it. And so all of that's going to happen. That gets the Cougars to 17 points. And then I think there's got to be a big play in there somewhere. Somebody on special teams is going to have to make a big return to give us a short field, something, or take it all the way back, a defensive touchdown for the Cougars this time. And I just think that one of those is going to come up. So I got us at 24. I do not think that the Utah offense is particularly skilled. And so I will think that the Cougars D is going to force a lot of field goals out of Utah. They will hit three of them and get in the end zone once. So I will say the Cougars 24, Utah 16. That's right. I want them money line and against the spread. Let's go, Cougars. And hopefully Tasha's reverse jinx works. It can't possibly be 6 years in a row, could it? Ugh. No matter what, I hope we all enjoy the game and try to avoid any depression if they lose. And if they win, enjoy all the euphoria that comes your way. If you've enjoyed this podcast, again, I apologize that we had some audio problems at the end. But if you enjoy this podcast, please go give us 5 stars on iTunes. It really helps. iTunes rates those very importantly. Our numbers in terms of downloads are great. We just we need more reviews on iTunes, and of course, tell your friends about the podcast. If you do that for us, we would really, truly appreciate it. We've given you over 100 shows now. So if you've been a fan of the show, you've listened, we sure could use a nice rating. So thanks again for listening to us, and go Cougars.
Thank you for listening to CougarCast. If you enjoyed this show, take the time out to give us a rating on iTunes. Also, look for us on VanquishTheFoe.com. If that isn't enough, you can follow us on Twitter @CougarCast. Enjoy the games, and go Cougars!